Now, much more important things to talk about. I don't know if you've been looking at Sky recently. There's been some, I probably shouldn't say that, but there's been some unbelievably fantastic reporting done by that organisation in Myanmar. And I have been absolutely horrified. Maybe it was this that kept me awake, because some of the images took me back to my time in Bosnia when I was reporting there. Certainly the conditions for hospitals and things like that, which are sort of makeshift huts, very similar to the civil war in Bosnia. But more than 6,000 civilians have been killed in Myanmar since February 21. That's including 2,580 in the last 12 months. There have also been over 700 fires in the country from June 21 to January 23, more than one every day, with many thought to have been started by the Myanmar military as a way of controlling the population. This is a very confused situation, and for the reporters out there, as it was in Bosnia, there is no front line. There's no front line with good guys on one side and bad guys on the other. This is very, very confused civil war with the junta, or the junta, and with the military. It is chaos, but people are dying in this chaos while the world doesn't pay any attention to it. So joining me now is Dr. Zani, who's an award-winning activist, co-founder of the Free Burma Coalition, as well as the Forces of Renewal for Southeast Asia. Dr. Zani, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Petri, for having me on your show.
Now, as I was saying, the situation there, people, I find, imagine war to be, you know, like it is with Ukraine and Russia. Right, where there's a good guy on one side or a bad guy on the other side. No matter which way whichever side you happen to be on, there is a line where one is on one side and one is on the other. That is not what we're talking about in Myanmar, is it?
No, that is what we're talking about. I need to make one correction, because on one side is the country's national armed forces.
No, I mean physically. I'm talking the physical fighting.
Yeah, morally,
I agree with you. There are two sides,
black and white situation. Yeah.
But the actual fighting that I'm trying to sort of get across, the chaos that these people are living under.
Yeah, but in the commercial centers such as Rangoon or Mandalay, you know, the two largest cities, and other larger urban establishments around trading routes with India or China or Thailand, the situation's relatively stable, and it's not like Lebanon or Syria situation, or not even, you know, parts of Ukraine. But that said, I need to make one clarification. We are actually not talking about civil war as such, because it is not different regions or ethnic communities the fighting to wrestle control of the state, but what we are seeing is a nationwide armed resistance and the peaceful civil disobedience movement that is led by civil servants. What that means is not like sit-in and, you know, direct actions and protests, but a overwhelming number of civil servants from different sectors, including health and education, no longer working for the state, because they wanted to empty the state out. They wanted to deprive the military of any means to use any state organs to control or placate or even repress the population. So we do not have a civil war. We have a nationwide armed resistance. And we also have what I will call the progressive social revolution. The younger generation, Burmese of all ethnicities and faiths, they are disillusioned with the old, vanguardist party of Aung San Suu Kyi that collaborated with the ruling military when the military was committing a textbook example of genocide against the Muslim Rohingya in Western Myanmar. As you would recall, Aung San Suu Kyi, in a jaw-dropping moment, traveled to the International Court of Justice in The Hague, in Netherlands, not to stand up for the genocide victims, but to defend and deny the military's actions amounted to genocide, or there was a genocidal intent. Yeah, she even dismissed credible, documented allegations of mass rape of the Rohingya woman by the military. Also, you mentioned Bosnia-Herzegovina. You know, like in one single place, Srebrenica alone, like close to 8,000 young Muslim men and including the boys were slaughtered, as you well know, some 25 years or so ago. And that is the number of, or actually the military's own number of Rohingya that they had killed, 6,000 in a span of several months. And so in a nutshell, what we are seeing is a case of a genocidal regime with the veneer of democratic government of Aung San Suu Kyi being or having been allowed to proceed in the interest of international business and trade, repeating the same thing, except that this time the very genocidal national armed forces have turned on against its own multi-ethnic majority public, as opposed to vulnerable.
So you've got the military firing on the population, basically. That's what's happening. So, you know, in terms of civil disobedience or civil revolution, it feels more like civil war, although I agree with you that it's not, that they're fighting against the military control. But what we are seeing is that the state military is killing the people of Myanmar. They're shooting at them. They're blowing them up. They're doing anything that they can, setting fire to things, to clear people out of their homes, entire villages where people are homeless. No military aid, no food aid, no nothing. So they're trying to crush this civil revolution.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The three elements that are part of this, the under the umbrella term national uprising, nationwide uprising. You know, like I said, that the civil servants refusing to do the state's building, refusing to go back to work, and teachers and whatnot, and a good number of them, a good percentage of that. State boycotting or military boycotting civil servants have taken up arms. They trained to fight.
Getting the arms from? I mean, where the military is, but where are the arms coming from for the civilians to fight back?
Well, I mean, certainly not from the NATO or the United Nations. Because we are not Ukraine at the doorsteps of Europe, and also it's not considered strategically important enough for NATO or the United States. And so, where the arms are coming from? Well, it's a good question because we have been in a proper civil war on and off with fluctuating intensity
for decades now,
since 1948. We are a multi-ethnic society, or you can say a cluster of different nations that agree to join and form a union of equal ethnic communities. When the majority Burmese Buddhist, of which I'm a member, Suu Kyi is a dominant Burmese Buddhist. Her father founded this National Armed Forces. The army or the armed forces of three branches were all controlled by the Burman Buddhist, like myself. So we renege on the promise of ethnic and group equality. You know, at the time of the end of the Second World War, self-determination, ethnic equality, were the ones that, you know, determined the political discourse and discussions and politics, and not, you know, individual human rights at the time. And so when we broke the promise that we gave to the non-Burmese smaller nations, they rose up, and that, you know, that there were no political space for them, for the minorities to process their grievances. And so they took up arms. So we have about two dozen ethnic groups that were armed. You talk about Syria with five different factions. Well, we have about 22 or 23 armed groups with different strengths. Some of them have over the last 60 or 70 years. That's how long the internal armed conflict has been going on. So some people would say that Second World War never ended in Burma. Yeah. And so, like, the war ended in 1945,
yeah,
in April in Europe, and also, you know, August in Japan and the Pacific. But our civil war broke out in March 1948. So some big groups along the Chinese and Burmese border, they build their armed factories. And remember, we have, you know, thousands of miles long borders with India, China, Thailand, Bangladesh, right? Like about 270 yeah. miles long border with Bangladesh. So the borders were porous, and the arms could be, you know, smuggled in across yeah, these borders. And also, like, the armed factories in the country, they were transported from one region to the others. And so we have hundreds of People's Defense Forces joining forces with the established armed ethnic resistance groups. They are fighting. And so the army is, or the National Armed Forces is no longer considered, a national defense force that protects even the Burman Buddhist majority. We have this scenario. National Armed Forces is considered the common oppressor of the entire multi-ethnic society. That is what is going on. It is not a straightforward civil war.
No, there's very rarely anything straightforward, I think, about war anyway. Can I take you back to Aung San Suu Kyi? She used to be the sort of the darling of the West, seen as being oppressed and this peaceful person, this woman who was locked in a home for 30 odd years. She has slipped from grace since the support of the military and the outright lying about the Rohingya Muslims. But can she still play a part in any peace negotiations that could take part? Because she must have lost her authority.
She has lost, her international policy influence. You know,
completely.
Absolutely. Because, you know, as you know, like in during her on and off house arrest, three or four times over the last 25 or years or so, we heard in the media as well as the from the different international capitals, especially, you know, London, Brussels, Washington, Paris, calling for her release.
Absolutely.
Now, she's been in captivity. You know, she's serving 33 years, prison sentence on trumped up corruption charges. She's not guilty of these things, but she is complicit in the genocide. That, to me, is far more consequential than, you know, any economic corruption. But, your question, does she still have a role? I think, tragically, she does. I say tragically because, you know, a society that has come to realize that, that they have been misled into cheerleading the genocide. Genocides are not just simply crimes of passion. They are premeditated by central organization, often armed forces and political parties and, you know, the organs of the state. And at the time, Aung San Suu Kyi was the de facto head of state. And she, you know, fully collaborated with the genocidal military. So, you know, we have a situation where, you know, post-genocidal society, you know, re-embracing, you know, 50% of the genocidal leadership, which is the civilian democratic leadership of Aung San Suu Kyi, and that society is fighting the other 50% of that genocidal leadership, which is the armed forces. And so she, you know, recently, I think like last weekend, the outgoing Thai foreign minister was brought in to meet Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yeah, on the it was all under secrecy, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. I mean, like Ban Ki-moon went there, the Chinese foreign minister, Chinese special envoy on Burma went there. You know, the Burmese military is correctly seen as, you know, heavily reliant on China for international protection. For instance, like a veto protection at the Security Council. Mm. And the other party that protects the Burmese military is, you know, a Russian Federation. So, you know, despite these protections and despite its reliance on Beijing, the military leadership refused to allow the any Chinese official to meet with Aung San Suu Kyi because they know they cannot control Beijing's messaging or Beijing's call for anything, right? So they could control the Thai foreign minister and what he was going to say. So they allowed, or they actually collaborated with the Thai foreign minister, you know, 2 days before the ASEAN foreign minister summit, just so he could say that he met with the imprisoned Aung San Suu Kyi, and Aung San Suu Kyi support dialogue with the military without calling for any type of preconditions to be met. But, you know, in the middle of, like, you know, airstrikes against civilians, you talk about, like, you know, hospitals and clinics, the military is committing what, by any definition of international terrorism, would say terrorist airstrike. You do not target civilian populations, whether refugees or internally displaced people, on the clinics or hospitals, right? Under any circumstances.
It's like when the Serbs were shut down, weren't they, with their air?
That's right.
Because it was seen to be a step too far. Dr. Zani, I know there's much to discuss here, but I'm afraid I've completely run out of time. But thank you very much indeed for joining me this evening. Dr. Zani, the award-winning activist, co-founder for the Free Burma Coalition, as well as the Forces for Renewal for Southeast Asia. Stay with us. We're heading to the stars next.
On your mobile, on your wavelength, Talk Radio and Talk TV.